And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I'm just kind of an interim host today because joining us today is Dwight Zimmerman, and Dwight is going to be hosting his section of Veterans Radio called At Ease. And Dwight, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. It's a pleasure to be here again, and hello, everyone. It's still a wonderful morning here in Brooklyn, New York, though, of course, as everyone knows, we're going to be inundated by a little storm called Sandy soon.
I saw that, and I hope that you have battened down the hatches, as they say, and brought in the provisions, because it looks like you guys are going to get slammed pretty well.
Well, fortunately, we're not in the Philadelphia, D.C., and Baltimore area, because that looks like they're going to get the brunt of it. But, yeah, we're working on being prepared, that's for sure.
Okay, well, Dwight's going to talk about his program in a second, and we want to encourage you to call in today. Dwight's got a couple of really great authors on his program, At Ease, and we want you to give us a call here at Veterans Radio. If you have a question for Dwight, it's 877-573-7825. It's 877-573-7825. And a couple of announcements real quick, just to remind everybody. In the local area here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, we've got The Wall That Heals is going to be arriving in Dearborn on October 25th at 10 a.m. And it's going to be here until October 29th. And this is the Traveling Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall. And the founder of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, Jan Scruggs, is going to be the guest speaker on October 25th at 10 a.m., and that's at the wall that heals, and it's going to be set up at the Ford Motor Company World Headquarters on One American Road in Dearborn, Michigan. So that's coming up on the 25th at 10 a.m., The Wall That Heals. The other thing is for local veterans is that there's going to be a Veterans Hiring Expo at Washtenaw Community College, and that's coming up on October 30th, and that is from noon to 4. And there are many employers. Last I heard was something around 50 employers are there, and they're looking to hire veterans. So this is especially for you younger veterans. From the Iraq and Afghanistan, but they also are looking for people from my era and from Gulf War I and so forth. So if you're a veteran, bring lots of resumes and go out there to the Veterans Hiring Expo at Washtenaw Community College at the Morris Lawrence Building. It begins at noon on the 30th, so make sure that you are there. Right now, we're going to be taking a break, and when we do come back, we're going to have our award-winning host, Dwight Zimmerman, with his program today, At Ease. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're going right to Dwight Zimmerman with At Ease.
Thank you, Dale, and good morning, everyone. I am very happy to have as my guests this morning Gary Grossman and Buck Stanky and Ken Farmer, who will be talking about their thrilling books that are coincidentally the third books in their respective series. My first guest is Gary Grossman. Gary, are you on?
I sure am. Good morning, Dwight. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Say, you just returned from Boston, you know, in advance of this upcoming storm. So what time zone is your body in right now?
We're just over 6 o'clock in the morning, 0600. and it's just fine. You know, I always have a philosophy, everyone has to be somewhere. So for a while I was in New York last week, then Boston, now back here, and, you know, I think there's only one time zone. It's what your body is in at that moment.
Indeed. Well, a little bit of background on Gary. He has a extensive career in radio, television producer, a documentarian, and a thriller writer. He and I actually go way back. I was his editor on his first two books in this series called Executive Actions and Executive Treason, and also Gary's company, Weller Grossman Productions, produced the TV documentary of my book, First Command, that's been aired ever since 2005 on the military channel. So it's just really exciting to see this latest book in your series. I remember when we were talking about it way back when, and you came up with some frightening stuff.
Well, thank you. Well, I say thank you, and I'm laughing. It's really kind of a nervous laugh. The new book, the new novel, the new political thriller is Executive Command. And, you know, with your tutelage and recommendation to obviously deal with experts in your research and work with people who really know things, one of the major things I learned is to think the unthinkable. That's where our work against terrorism has to start every single day. We have to think the unthinkable. We have to think in movie scenarios and book plots, because they may seem outlandish, but in fact those are the things that actually can be planned. You know, I heard a story that True Lies, remember the Schwarzenegger movie?
Yes.
Came out in the 1990s. I bumped into Tom Arnold once in a lobby, and I said, gee, Tom, how come there was never a second True Lies movie? And he said, well, we were about to do one. We had a great plot. It was a submarine off of Manhattan, and that submarine had been, I guess, a captured submarine, and it was going to fire missiles at the World Trade Centers. Well, you know, a moment in time that will be forever, September 11th, 2001, immediately removed True Lies 2 from any consideration. And, of course, Schwarzenegger ran for governor after that. But, you know, here was an unthinkable thing that was, in fact, in another way, accomplished. So Executive Actions thinks the unthinkable with the Russian sleeper cell spies still living and working in the United States left over from the Cold War. Executive Treason deals with the power of hate radio that can actually help influence and drive population to make decisions they may or may not feel that they want to do, not really so much based on anybody on the right or left now, but based on a most popular radio personality in the 1930s, Father Charles Coughlin. And now Executive Command deals with what I think is our greatest, most vulnerable natural resource, and that is water. That's the plot of Executive Command, water being used as a terrorist target in the United States.
Yes, I remember us talking way back when you were beginning to plot it, and during one of our brainstorming sessions, you know, I tossed out the idea of a coordinated blowing up of the Garrison and Owyhee dams on the Missouri River in North and South Dakota. But you didn't use that one.
I didn't use it. I stayed with, and it was you know what? It could have been the second phase that I never got to for circumstances that are in the book, as you've read. But I dealt with poisons and toxins, chemical warfare, biological warfare. Now, it's very hard in truth. It's extremely hard to actually poison the waters in a significant way. Because it takes a tremendous amount of toxins to really have an impact, and most toxins, chemical or biological, get very quickly diluted. But that's on a big reservoir scale. there's so much more that can be accomplished on a local macro scale, whether it's wells on farms or whether it's bottled water in hospitals, whether it's in Nashua, New Hampshire, or in Las Vegas, Nevada. Across the country, terrorists could create such havoc simply by the fear that the water you're about to drink and wash your face with and brush your teeth with and make your coffee with can kill you. And that disruption in the political structure and the social structure on a large scale across the country, where there are illnesses and there are deaths, and the discovery of where some of this is going on, but the fear that it's everywhere, that's very, very, very real. And that kind of thing is something that just hasn't been invented, yesterday. That goes back in the use of water and dealing with water as a terrorist or military objective goes back, certainly to the beginning of war as we know it, and probably well before 6th century B.C. In Athens, there was water contamination. Toward the end of the Civil War, General Sherman was said to have tainted Confederate drinking supplies on his march. An area that was developed years ago with the war on the Seminoles. In 1970s, wells in the Bangladesh were contaminated with arsenic. Decades later, the Palestinians on the West Bank claimed that Jewish settlers were poisoning their drinking water and vice versa. In the 80s, we began to see threats in the United States. And in 1996, America's Safe Drinking Water Act identified the specific contaminants and poisons which, in the hands of Americans, could pose real danger to the destruction of the infrastructure of American life. All of that's in executive command.
And more. Yes. Well, the thing is, the many things that I've been so impressed with your work is, as you just demonstrated in this summary, your attention to detail is just absolutely fantastic. Also, you constructed a very tight and twisting plot, but in particular, you have very vivid characters. The three principals here are, of course, Morgan Taylor, the president, Scott Rourke, the Secret Service agent, and Katie Kessler, who is now the Deputy White House Counsel. Katie especially has really grown, in this trilogy. I'd like you to talk about her for a bit, if you could, please.
Well, thank you. Katie Kessler in Executive Actions was an attorney in a Boston law firm who, through a set of circumstances, and I guess isn't that always the way, suddenly finds herself in a world that is much larger than the one she thought she lives in. And that is because of her meeting with Scott Rourke, a Secret Service agent under special operational a lack of restrictions and purview from President Morgan Taylor. They're investigating a potential link between Russian sleeper cell spies and someone who is in the, let's say, political process and has eyes on the White House. So she finds herself in those set of circumstances and is propelled along through executive actions and executive treason with her knowledge and her belief that our succession rules and laws, 25th Amendment, is outdated for the world that we live in, this most dangerous world that we live in. So that's one of the things that she works on. When it came to executive treason, or finishing executive treason, moving into executive command, I got a wonderful email from a reader who said, most of the political thriller authors end up killing their female lead in their third book or their fourth book. Katie is so good and so strong and helps complete Scott Rourke as a character and also is... a dynamic, strong woman who stands up to the Supreme Court justice, stands up to the President of the United States, having been thrown into the circumstance that she's in. Well, this reader said, please, whatever you do, don't kill Katie. And I hadn't thought of what I would do with her yet. Put her in a coma if you need to. Have her travel the world. Give her some free tickets. Don't kill her. And I promised there and then that I would not. And in fact, most political thrillers, or as I like to describe my work, political reality thrillers, they're all steeped in reality. And we'll talk about another aspect, I hope, in a moment, Ciudad del Este, Paraguay, which figures into this executive command in a huge way. Most of them don't have a strong female lead, number one, and most of them still have a James Bond or a Mitch Rapp or a Jack Ryan kind of character who alone figures everything out. I believe that for the government to work effectively, let alone law enforcement and the military, people have to be talking to one another and sharing information on intel, strategy, research, and then ultimately what the operational plan is. That's what, to me, has to really work in a complex novel that still moves at lightning speed, because that's what it takes to attack us.
Yes, and in fact, when you were mentioning the climactic scene on the Paraguay-Brazil border, there's also this mysterious character, the villain, who is that rogue Soviet sleeper agent who came back seemingly from the dead in treason, and the climax itself, in which Rourke is chasing him, was so fast-paced and tense, and it was very cinematographic. It reminded me a lot of Steve McQueen's classic chase scene in Bullet.
Oh, my God, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You can tweet that until the cows come home. I love that. Well, I set that and much of the planning in Ciudad del Este, Paraguay. Now, members of the military community will probably be familiar with Ciudad del Este. Most of the general population will not know this. Ciudad del Este is on the tri-border of Brazil, Paraguay, and Argentina. It's right where the huge falls are. It is also probably the most dangerous spot in the from a terrorism and a crime aspect in the entire Western Hemisphere. It is the home to Hamas and Hezbollah in the Western Hemisphere, to Chinese, Taiwanese, Korean gangs, to MS-13 has roots in there as well, which is growing and huge and dangerous El Salvadorian gang working in the United States and our major cities. And this is where my principal mastermind behind the plots, Ibrahim Haddad, lives, and is a master chess player, moving players around the country, our country, the United States, and poisoning the wells. Ultimately, we end up in his world in Ciudad del Este, dealing with him, and also, as you talk about, the assassin, who's really a U.S. citizen gone wrong, and he is modeled after the kind of jackal character, an assassin who's a master of disguises and brutal and trained and theatrical and a great character to write for. In fact, in Executive Actions, I did not know his backstory. He began just to tell me that, as characters do in Executive Treason, and then I think he really becomes fully blown in Executive Command and has a nice turn to his character, I think.
Yes, you even bring in his mother, and I said, wow, now this is a nice little added dimension. Tell our listeners where they can get your books.
Thanks. They're all available as e-books. They're e-book platforms. So for Anyone with an Kindle, a Nook, an iPad, an iPhone, anything that is a smartphone or a e-reader, they're all available through, and I'll give you my website, GaryGrossman.com, GaryGrossman.com, and you can, through there, go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iBookstore, any number of portals where you can download it, or you can go directly to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and iBookstore, Kobo as well. But just to reinforce, these are ebook releases, and as I like to say, to get very commercial, it's only executive command is only $2.99, and it's less than a cup of coffee these days or a slice of pizza, and it lasts so much longer.
Yes, indeed. So this latest story seems to crown the trilogy, but you still leave some things open. So what's next on the agenda?
Well, I have to think about that. I don't know. I may... I may focus more on the president and a plot surrounding the president. I may do something with the Supreme Court. But I'm also thinking that I've got a very rich character in Vinnie D'Angelo, another character we haven't mentioned, who's a CIA operative and a very good, clever one. And just as Tom Clancy broke out a book with his CIA operative, other than Jack Ryan, and I'm just blanking on his
John
name
Clark.
Right now. Thank
John
you.
Clark.
Thank you, John Clark. I'm thinking, I wonder, maybe I'll follow, I'll have a talk with Vinnie D'Angelo and see what he tells me. And by the way, it should not go unsaid about, or I can't let the moment pass without congratulating you on your great new work. And there are many things to talk about, the hammer and the anvil, but also the Lincoln's Last Days. So congratulations, and you've made the New York Times bestseller list.
Thank you. Yes, it does feel good. And I noticed we're back at number one again. It feels good.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, Gary, this is just, I am just so happy for how you elevated your story with this latest book. It is just, Executive Command, I have to say, really has been a crowning effort. When you started out, it was fast-paced. It was gripping. I remember when we were talking in the early days with Executive Actions, you mentioned at one point your wife got very worried about you when there was a time where she saw those computer files on weaponry and explosives. Explain to the readers that, because it's
true. Oh, absolutely. It's a true story. I did not know whether or not I was going to actually complete a novel, a thriller. And I had written nonfiction books in the past. I, as you mentioned in your wonderful introduction, produced many, many TV shows, History Channel and A&E, Military Channel, Discovery, on and on. But I didn't know whether or not I would be successful writing, so I didn't tell anybody. And I could get away with that while the kids went to sleep at night, and I'd sit at the computer for an hour, 90 minutes, 2 hours, and I'm, you know, here's just, you know, Gary working at the computer. I'll be, you know, don't worry, I'll come to bed soon. Well, lo and behold, you do 3-4 pages a day, it begins to add up. But I also was doing a lot of research on the Internet, and I neglected to put some of that research away. So one day, about a month and a half into my writing, my wife came up to me when I came home from work, and she said, Gary, do we have a problem? I said, what? Well, you know, what are you talking about? And she's looking at me, you know, with real serious eyes, and she put a file down in front of me and said this. Well, what was in the file? poisons that can go undetected in your blood system unless you have a coroner who really, really, really knows what she or he are looking for. A sniper rifle is good for 200 yards. And I said, oh, those.
those.
Oh, you see, those. Well, I'm writing a novel, which, of course, I'd never done before, and she still, that look didn't go away. I said, well, wait, like, I'll show you here, and I opened up the file, and there it was, and there was a scene in your neck of the woods, or I guess in Montana, and near where you're from, and in a fishing expedition, and somebody is poisoned by this Jacko master assassin, who I didn't even know his name then. And she saw that, but felt a little better, but felt really a lot better when, thank you very much, the book came out, and there it was in print, and I was not trying to kill my wife. And I can say that once again, I'm not trying to kill my wife.
Or anyone else, sales for that.
Or anyone else. In fact, I have trouble killing some of the villains in books because they're such rich characters. I'm getting better at it, though, I must say. But it's they are among the most interesting characters, and you know, you don't necessarily even want to do it in a way that does not seem original. Although I must say, there is a scene in Executive Command. That employs Navy SEAL Team 6, that they're quite, they're one of their most recent or, you know, certainly most visible operations, the attack on Osama bin Laden. You might say I borrowed from, but in turn I might say they borrowed from Executive Actions, because there's a scene in Executive Actions that I wrote a number of years ago that... it describes very clearly what they did in their takedown on Osama bin Laden, right down to the ship that they tasked out of, if you remember this, the USS Carl Vinson.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So maybe we're borrowing from each other. They know how to do it, and hopefully I know how to write about it correctly.
Yes, indeed. So, Gary... stepping back from it and looking at all three books, what is the thing that you're most proud about when you review all three of them as a whole?
Well, thank you. I love and I'm proud of the research and the people that I've worked with on research. In the newest book, Executive Command, I've worked with one of my childhood friends, Bruce Koons, who's former, let's just say he's had a remarkable career in the United States Army, and he knows things that help me a great deal in describing efforts around the world, just as I work with a Navy commander in the writing of Executive Actions and Executive Treason, and I've worked with a lifelong friend who has worked in the White House with every administration since Richard Nixon. And sees through the politics and looks at the man, maybe one day a woman. But I'm a firm believer that on the first day that a president is sworn in, a number of people come to him and say, Mr. President, sit down, because this is what now we need to tell you that you don't know.
Yes.
And those eye-opening experiences can certainly change somebody and immediately make you, hopefully, a good world leader. At worst, you're a world leader or a bad world leader, but it gives you information and focus and a sense of responsibility you probably never thought you had. And I bet that happens pretty darn quickly the first day.
Okay, we're almost at the break time. So real quickly again, Gary, if you could tell our listeners where they can get your books.
Thank you, Dwight. excuse me. Log on to www.GaryGrossman.com, GaryGrossman.com. The new novel, the new political reality thriller, steeped in reality, is Executive Command. The first two books in the series, and you can start with those, are Executive Actions and Executive treason, driven with military history and characters come out of virtually all of the military armed forces. And I'd love people's reactions. You can reach me also through GaryGrossman.com. And thank you so much, Dwight.
Thank you, Gary. This is Dwight Zimmerman. You're at ease. Gary, I'm so happy to have you on as my guest, and good luck with your books.
Thank you once again. Likewise with yours, and love what you're doing with the show.
Good luck. So we are at ease, approaching the break. Dale, you can take it away.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Sergeant David Bleek, although a medical aid man, killed three North Korean soldiers and disarmed two more. Details after this.
I am a United States sailor.
I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, and I will obey the orders of those appointed over me.
I represent the fighting spirit of the Navy and those who have gone before me to defend freedom and democracy around the world.
I proudly serve my country's Navy combat team with honor, courage, and commitment. I am committed to excellence and the fair treatment of all.
I am a United States sailor.
Bleek volunteered to accompany a reconnaissance patrol committed to engage the enemy and capture a prisoner for interrogation. Forging up the rugged slope of the key terrain, the group was subjected to intense automatic weapons and small arms fire and suffered several casualties. After administering to the wounded, Bleek continued to advance with the patrol. Nearing the crest of the hill while attempting to cross the fire-swept area to attend the wounded, he came under hostile fire from a small group of the enemy concealed in a trench. Entering the trench, he closed with the enemy, killed two with his bare hands, and a third with his trench knife. Moving from the emplacement, Bleek saw a concussion grenade fall in front of a companion and, quickly shifting his position, shielded the man from the impact of the blast. Later, while ministering to the wounded, a hostile bullet struck him, but, despite the wound, Bleek undertook to evacuate the wounded comrade. As he moved down the hill with his heavy burden, two enemy soldiers with fixed bayonets attacked him. Closing with the aggressors, he grabbed them and smacked their heads together, then carried his helpless comrade down the hill to safety.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Nobody else I know has been there.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Not everyone understands that.
Things at home may be as you left them.
But you don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're reintroducing Dwight Zimmerman with his portion of his program, At Ease. Dwight, you're on.
Thank you, Dale, and welcome back to At Ease. I'm happy to welcome as my next guests Buck Stanky and Ken Farmer. Excuse me. Buck, Ken, good morning.
We're here. How are you, sir?
We're doing fine there, Ken. So we... had you on not too long ago in your second Black Eagle Force novel, and just absolutely thrilled to see the third book in the series called Return of the Starfighter.
You're a real glutton for punishment there.
So I have to say, you guys really impressed me with the twists and turns, and I mean, you guys throw in the kitchen sink when you tell your tales.
Well, isn't that what we're supposed to do?
Well, sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. So basically, Ken, if you could very briefly summarize the plot of this for our listeners.
Well, this is tied to reality in our, you know, what's going on geopolitically, in that with the amount of money that we owe China. And China decides, because they had found out through their research that they believed that they had actually discovered America in 1422 when Admiral Hee landed on the coast off of Oregon. And based on maps that he had with him from that were drawn by Kublai Khan. So they think that, well, we can make claim on the western coast of the United States and then make demand on the $5 trillion in debt, but we want it in gold. Well, our president said, not on my watch. And but simultaneously, there a rogue admiral in the Chinese Navy had two of their new catamaran-type twin deck carriers built, and so he decides he's going to put a little pressure on the U.S. and also to create a worm that negated all of our, what do we call it?
Fly-by-wire.
The fly-by-wire planes. And, Buck, you pick it up from there.
So in the process of destabilizing our military by eliminating all of our fighters and the B-2 bombers and our missiles, it basically puts the United States at risk for an invasion. We have no way to defend our shores. With the current generation of fighters, so we have to go to the boneyard and activate some of the Century series and F-4s and F-111 fighters from the out of Davis-Monthan, and the story is about the task of doing that on short notice and developing a team to do so. And the Black Eagle Force comes in to help with some of their new electro magnetic weapons that we've devised.
Which weren't affected by the worm. It was interesting. Buck found a thing on the internet this morning about Boeing had just tested a new EMP from a drone in Utah that knocked out all of the electronics, and which we use a very similar device in Return of the Starfighter, except ours is directional. Using the Einstein theory of quantum entanglement, in that we entangled a EMP pulse with a laser and so made it directional to disable certain electronics at will.
So you said that you were using older weapon systems, particularly the aircraft from the Vietnam era. So whose idea was this?
I had done a series of articles on Facebook, referenced the Century Series aircraft, the F-100, the 102s, 104s, 105s, 106s, and all that, and done some research on those particular aircraft and posted those. And I got a lot of feedback, positive feedback from other writers and other military aficionados. And as a result of that, I said, you know what, it would be fun is to actually create a scenario in which we could use some of my favorite aircraft from the last century and put them into, bring them up to speed with modern missiles and the little stealth technology on them, a radar absorptive material on the surface of the aircraft, and actually updated their electronics in kind of ersatz fashion. We couldn't go through and replicate a glass cockpit on, say, an F-105 or an F-104, but what we could do is bring in a Wi-Fi setup so that we could connect the aircraft to a mothership, which was broadcasting enemy locations, and we would use something similar to an iPad that the pilots would install and hang up near their instrument panel, so they could actually tell where the displacement of forces was, the disposition of forces. And, you know, it was a fun exercise from a theoretical standpoint, and it turns into a pretty credible story. It's selling very well. It's been in the top 50 on action adventure at Amazon, as well as, of course, Barnes & Noble and Kobo and a lot of other retail outlets. But we're the book's doing well, considering it's only been out a little over a month.
Yeah, congratulations. Successful collaborative teams. You guys got four books and counting. Now, having collaborated on books myself, I know how difficult such efforts can be. Describe to our listeners how you guys have managed to succeed and produce some very thrilling books.
Well, we had an interview here a couple of weeks ago on a blog type thing, and somebody said, have there been any sparks? And if so, has there been bloodletting? And I said, well, of course we have sparks, but there's been no bloodletting yet. we sit down and we do not outline books. We have a general concept of our story, and we sit down and we literally just sit and brainstorm with one another. We create our characters because we like to feel that the characters tell the story. So when you have strong characters, and sometimes they even surprise us, but really we sit down and just brainstorm idea, and Buck will say, Kenny, you write the stuff that goes on in the Situation Room, and I'll take what the stuff's going on at Davis-Monthan Air Base. And then we sit and blend it together like shuffling a deck of cards.
Oh, Buck, could you tell us a bit about the Boneyard, since that figures so prominently in the U.S. efforts here in Return of the Starfighter?
Yeah, the AMAR group up there is essentially responsible for the storage and maintenance of approximately 4,000 aircraft, which would be the third or fourth largest air force in the world if it was activated. And out of that group, they maintain approximately 700 on a ready reserve status by they change the oil, put air in the tires, hook up the avionics systems and the batteries, and actually run the engines, and then they go back into the deep storage mode. But they do that on a regular basis to keep the seals from leaking and other things that long-term storage can actually cause a degradation of the aircraft just by sitting out there. It's wrapped up, or the aircraft are wrapped in a white plastic that's known as Spraylat. That's probably the name of the company that makes it. But they even include some F-15s. It's surprising that some of our active duty fighters, A's and B's and C models, are actually stored out there in Davis-Monthan because they've been superseded by a later version. And in many cases, the parts are not necessarily interchangeable, particularly in the avionics, because we're constantly updating those. But the fighters, although they may have been designed back in the 50s and 60s and built anywhere up through the last F-111 was taken off active duty in 1998, it's still a highly capable aircraft, much more so than many of our adversaries can field. And the fact that we have them still out there, and that the parts are in storage, and the avionics oftentimes will be taken out and stored in a more hermetically sealed environment and leave them out there on the flight line, it does offer the United States a ready reserve of very capable equipment. Some of them are capable of more than Mach 2 and can fly 60,000 feet, and they can drop almost any ordnance that we have in our inventory now. So understanding the capabilities of those aircraft, they have been superseded in stealth by the F-22 and F-35, but in many cases they're still faster and it can carry more cargo and more armament on them than the modern replacements.
Okay, we're coming close to the break, so excuse me. Real quickly, can you tell our listeners where they can get your books?
Well, the books are all available, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iBooks, all over the world. And if they want to have the prestige of having an autographed copy, they can go to www.blackeagleforce.com and we'll be glad to sign one or all three. As we're having a lot of people liking to buy the sets, and but we're coming with number four, which is Black Eagle Force, Blood Ivory, about poachers and pirates.
Okay, well,
almost done with that one.
Okay, on that, we're going to go to our break. This is Dwight John Zimmerman at Ease, and we'll be back with my guests, Buck Stanky and Ken Farmer, after the break.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And you're back on Veterans Radio, and if you'd like to have a question for Dwight, his guest, give us a call here at 877-573-7825. And now back to Dwight Zimmerman and At Ease.
Thank you, Dale. And I'm talking to my guests, Buck Stanky and Ken Farmer, about their latest book in the Black Eagle Force series, Return of the Starfighter. So we've talked about the story itself and some of the hardware and everything, but, of course, all of that, we need to talk about the characters here. So, Ken, tell me a little bit about what's happening with the members of Black Eagle Force.
Well, we can't tell you without giving away what they call it, spoilers, with a couple of the characters, but we do add some of the existing characters that were in our previous books, or didn't add them, but they carried them over, and in some instances, some of the lead characters in the previous books take a lesser role in this one, as some of our new characters who are actually instrumental in bringing the old iron back to functionality become the lead characters in this particular novel. And our existing characters, Dare Phillips and Mike Herman and all of our other characters that have been in both of our novels are all there. They do function as part of the story, but we've added some new ones that may or may not become part of the Black Eagle Force subsequently.
Well, okay. Tell us about, excuse me, I'm seeming to have some problems with my throat. The patriarch of the Black Eagle Force, he has a quite interesting story and relationship with the President of the United States.
He does. The Gunter Herman dated the lady who would later become the President of the United States when he was in college, and they were lovers, and then they at the end of the second novel, they had they got married. So he's traveling back and forth from the White House to his ranch in Texas, and when he gets his children involved in the fracas with the Chinese, he has to actually go out there and help and get hands on experience. He's not a kind of a guy that sits back and warms a bench. So he gets involved and actually flies on Mama Bird during the defense against the Chinese Armada.
As you recall from book two, Dwight, they had a child out of wedlock, which he was not aware of back in college. And she had he had actually been in her Secret Service detail, her own child, and he did not know that she was his mother, as in book two. And so in book three, he becomes part of the Black Eagle Force. That's Mickey Williams, and he becomes a member of the Raptor team, which is our ground unit of the Black Eagle Force.
That was a very nice surprise in Sacred Mountain. I really appreciated that little twist. Now, this daughter, you know, in Black Eagle Force, she's a real firebrand. Buck, what can you tell me about her?
Blaze Herman is a brilliant woman who has 2 degrees, both doctorates. One's in physics, other's electrical engineering. And she has almost a photographic memory and the capability to recall things at will. And not only that, put them together in real time to, in the first novel, she saves the C-5M mama bird from a Soviet MiG attack. In the second novel, she creates the new directional EMP weapon, which helps to defeat the Chinese armada. But she has a romantic interest in Derek Phillips, and they have not got married, but it's a possibility. We're just leaving that open. Another familiar thing which we have is in the first novel, Jill mentions that her father was a pilot and that he had just retired from the Air Force. In the second novel, he gets called back to active duty by Burner Stewart. To help run the operation there at Davis-Monthan to get the a couple hundred fighters back up and running in just a matter of 2 weeks. So it's a very frenetic activity with hundreds of people being involved. And I try to think of it, how would I solve the problem to the best of my ability? And the best thing you can do is to outsource and staff as best you can. Get the best people you can find. And as we said in the book, it's just amazing what can get done in a short amount of time if you don't care about who gets the credit. Because it's not about one person doing everything, because he can't.
And you leave them alone and let them do their job.
Yeah. And I just put some interesting little tidbits in here based on my staff experience, the 12th Air Force in here, is to, they said, do your job and don't spend all your time talking about doing your job. Like our general didn't even want to have stand-up briefings every day. And the reason was because in a week's time, it would use up basically one full work day just to have everybody preparing to do a stand-up briefing to tell the general what they've been doing. He said, I don't want you to tell me what you're doing. I want you to do it.
Yes, indeed. Why did you guys pick the starfighter as your key element, or key weapon, I should say, in this?
Starfighter is one of my favorite aircraft. I've always been a huge Kelly Johnson fan from Lockheed. My first military aircraft ever flew, actually the first fighter ever flew, was a Lockheed product. And I did fly a Douglas DC-3 was the first aircraft I ever flew in the military, but it was C-47. But that was when I was a ROTC cadet, and as an Air Force Academy cadet, I got to fly a T-33, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So I've always enjoyed his design work and everything up through the YF 12, and he was a huge influence on my thinking, and I love the design of the Starfighter. That didn't turn very well, but it sure was fast.
Well, if you remember the old Captain Midnight television series from the 50s, they did sort of a knockoff on the Starfighter for his plane. And in Return of the Starfighter, we have a character who's named after Richard Webb, who was the actor that played Captain Midnight, and his call sign that everyone gives him is Captain Midnight. So, yeah, Ovaltine and all.
That's neat. That's neat. So, what can we look forward to with the next novel?
Oh, boy. Well, we're about 85,000 words into Blood Ivory. and in which four of our characters, Mickey and Mike, Maria, Double D, Sanchez, use your imagination, and Jill, and they're on a honeymoon on a big cruise liner out in the Indian Ocean, and it gets hijacked. And so, but nobody knows that they're Black Eagle Force. And simultaneously, Senator Breitbart is abducted in Kenya. He and his daughter were on a photographic safari, and they're abducted by poachers. So we've got a complete mobilization, and we have to go and do a simultaneous rescue.
Globe-spanning almost, it sounds like.
It is. It's a very frenetic operation, and it's going to involve U.S. Forces outside of the Black Eagle Force, including the Special Operations Command and the Delta Force, the Rangers, and Green Berets, because the president has basically told the Department of Defense that she not only wants the cruise liner recovered, but she wants to end the threat of poaching from Somalia permanently. And they ask, "And well, what are my rules of engagement?" And she goes, "There are none, sir. There are none."
So we've got about a minute before the final break. Again, real quickly, if you could let our listeners know where they can get the books, please.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, anywhere where good books are sold, we are available. Autographed copies are available on our website, www.blackeagleforce.com, and we'd be glad to sign a little personal note to you. And but if you're into the e-book thing, anywhere e-books are sold, we're there.
Okay,
and we're actually into the we just broke into the top 20 in action adventure on Amazon.
Okay, well, that's absolutely fantastic news. I'm really happy for you guys, you know, and that kind of success, and I hope that you have much more. So this is Dwight Zimmerman. I've just been talking with Buck Stanky and Ken Farmer about their latest book in the Black Eagle Force line of thrillers, Return of the Starfighter. Buck, Ken, thank you again for being guests on my show. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.